Deep in the farthest recesses of the most distant jungle lies a city. A city populated by the most mysterious, terrifying, and downright grotesque denizens ever seen by mortal eye. Here, in the darkened corners of this cavernous locale, sits an ordinary, average brick building with an innocuous, ordinary, average blinking neon sign which reads, On Air. It is here where each week, Seth Breedlove and Mark Matzke convene to discuss the greatest mysteries the world has ever known. Now, strap on your hiking boots, grab your trusty walking stick, and don't forget the bug spray as we begin our journey through Monsteropolis.
This is Monsteropolis, a show about monsters, anomalies, and legends. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Seth Breedlove. I'm joined, as always, by my pal, Mark Matzke.
Hello there, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to our listeners, and Merry Christmas and all that. Hope everyone had a wonderful, wonderful year. We missed episodes, which obviously, I don't know how many weeks, two weeks, three?
Yeah, let's say 2 weeks.
Okay,
we missed a 2 week post Christmas break.
Right, we had a 2 week post Christmas break, which wasn't exactly planned. I got sick last week, and the week before was Christmas, if I'm not mistaken, or mm-hmm. was New Year's. Mm-hmm. Yeah, last week was New Year's. Yeah, yes. Yeah, that's right. So we knew we were going to miss the post Christmas episode. We did not know about last week's. So I was down all week. I had planned on doing some sort of like on the road with Shannon episode, cause she was supposed to be in town filming, but we all got sick, so there was no filming taking place last week. How are things?
Things are crazy. Yeah. But I don't know what to tell you. It's been for me just a whirlwind of activity, cause with Christmas obviously there's a lot of extra things I have to do with that.
Yeah.
There's been some situations in my vocation that have stretched me. So yeah. I'm just happy to be here today.
Yeah.
But Christmas was good itself and we had fun. My Christmas present theme this year seemed to be Japan. Mm. So I got all of these very nerdy toys and books.
That's
and
par for the course.
It is par for the course, but this year more than others, I have to say. Because I've kind of gone off on this sidetrack of post-occupation Japan old stuff collecting. So it's just a...
When are we going to go to Japan?
Oh, my goodness. I would say the time and the date.
Tokyo Disney Sea is my bucket. Like, that's top of my bucket list.
Okay, so I have a plan.
Okay, good.
Let's do it. Every year, I think it's in July or August, there is an Ultraman festival that they have in this little Ultraman land. Mm-hmm. So if we can coordinate that with a Tokyo Disney,
yeah,
it's on.
It's on. All right, cool. I have a feeling in the next couple of years, if all goes to plan, we're going to be doing a lot of traveling together. Hopefully... You won't be simply keeping me alive for days at a time, like the last time we traveled together alone. But you never know. It seems like I've
proven I can do it, so that's a good thing.
That is true. Now I was going to say something. So we have quick announcements to make. The Mysteries and Monsters at the Canton Palace Theater is coming up March 21st. Tickets are on sale at cantonpalacetheater.org. One thing about that event. Okay. First of all, the Mysteries and Monsters at the Canton Palace Theater is an all day Small Town Monsters event. Lyle Blackburn is speaking. Shannon LeGros is speaking. The entire Small Town Monsters crew will be there for Q&As throughout the day. We are doing a 5-year anniversary screening of Minerva Monster, and the Flatwoods Monster will be shown because it's never been played at the Canton Palace Theater. And then the big event is the entire series premiere of On the Trail of UFOs. And as far as that goes, there are going to be tickets. I don't know that they're up yet, but there are going to be tickets just for the premiere. So if you wanted to attend this, but didn't want to spend $12 on the entire, which I mean, it's pretty cheap for what you're getting, but, if you wanted to attend without spending the $12, there's going to be $6 tickets for the entire miniseries. And I believe the mini is going to begin at 6 o'clock in the evening, which is kind of early, but it's a Saturday. And the series is going to be about around or over 4 hours long. So you'll want to get there. There are going to be breaks. We're not going to be forcing people to sit there for like 5 hours straight.
Yeah.
But it'll be the one and only time people can see this on the big screen in its entire 8-episode run.
And you'll want to, I think, having seen a lot of the rough cuts just for the
scenery,
the landscape shots and stuff, and Sedona, I'm kind of obsessed with Sedona now.
Yeah.
Just based off of the footage that is in the film. It's incredible.
Gorgeous, gorgeous place.
How much time were you there?
We were there less than 24 hours. Yeah. So we were there, but I mean, we packed that entire trip. That trip and our trip to the West Coast, aside from me getting sick, is the epitome of what On the Trail of is. Mm-hmm. Because it is nonstop run and gun. Like, you remember what it was like when we got into Washington. Like, you hopped in the car and you drove to Mount St. Helens and we filmed and we drove back and then we slept and then we woke up and then we did it again the next day. That's what that trip was like. It was place to place, location to location, day to day. You were never in the same place for more than a day. So that, we were there less than 24 hours. We had some great pizza there in Sedona. Some great pizza. But I'm obsessed with that place too. I've actually been talking about it a lot. So, and I want to get back out there. I've got a plan for what's coming next from Small Town Monsters after the Southern Monsters trilogy that would take us back to the West Coast for films. So we'll see if that happens or not. But, what was I going to mention? There was one other thing. Okay. So one thing I wanted to talk about, February 6th, the 2020 Small Town Monsters Kickstarter launches. This is the Kickstarter to fund the Mothman Legacy, the Mark of the Bell Witch. The Bell Witch got me. Just this is
yes.
and
crackers too.
And On the Trail of UFOs. So, I don't think we've talked about this, but I want to talk about it real quick at the top of the show, since this show is going to be kind of a catch up anyway. there's rewards. We've announced the rewards for the campaign. What we haven't really announced anywhere yet, and since this is an audio podcast, I can do this without spoiling stuff. Gene St. Gene is doing a Bell Witch statue, which I've seen. It is his like specific take on the Bell Witch. Which seems to be drawing off of some of that Celtic lore, which is really, really a piece of the movie that I'm excited about. The Mothman Legacy movie is, I know they're not connected exactly, but they kind of are. Like, it's all Appalachia. I guess I hadn't really realized that a lot of that Appalachian lore is Celtic in root because of the fact there were so many Irish immigrants that came, which I didn't realize until we interviewed Susan Shepherd for the Mothman Legacy. So you're going to get a lot of like backstory and folklore in both of these movies, I think, the Mothman and Bell Witch. But anyway, Gene is doing this really cool statue. The base for this thing is probably my favorite base he's done yet. So that's one of them. There is a special 5-year anniversary full color Small Town Monsters logo tee. So that's going to be, this is actually the first time we've done a full color tee in the campaign. There was a color tee like 2 years ago, but it was only, I think it was like 3 colors. This is full color. So, that's going to be part of it. And then there's other things. One of the things that we haven't announced yet that I'm excited about is, all 3 projects coming out in 2020 are going to be available on Blu-ray. So, On the Trail of UFOs will be on Blu-ray. Mothman Legacy and Bell Witch will also be on Blu-ray, and those will be available in the campaign as separate tiers. And then the big announcement, the one that we're holding to the end to really like show off, is the fact that Mark has written a comprehensive retrospective on Small Town Monsters. And it's going to be, you're going to be able to read that in the form of this, very large. I think it's like she's doing page count now. It's like over 170 pages, somewhere between 170, 200 pages.
Nice.
Full size, full color coffee table book. We have the dimensions. It's a big book and it's going to be packed with this, Mark's sort of retrospective and, photos, full color photos, behind the scenes and artwork, from all of our movies up to 2020. So none of the 2020 projects are in here, but everything leading up to this point is in the book. And there's also, I got to find a place for it, but Brandon Dalo did a really comprehensive interview with me earlier this year. So I want to include that as well.
Yeah.
And that'll detail sort of the music and stuff. And I'll be writing an introduction. We're also going to try to get someone else to write an introduction too, but that's sort of the big, big reward that's going to be involved in the Kickstarter. Do you want to say anything about writing the book real quick?
Sure. I kind of miss writing it now.
Yeah.
Cause it was so full immersion for a while there. Mm-hmm. Just getting information and remembering the shoots and so forth. But I guess the thing that I walked away with in a new appreciation for was just how much work has been done in 5 years.
Yeah.
Well, you know, yeah, and we've talked about this before, but we tend not to be super reflective on it's always what's next and often multiple things happening next to plan for, or you're actually shooting or working on many things at once. So to have just the chance to set some time aside, look back and say, you know, it no wonder it's hard to recall these things sometimes because it's so compressed. I mean, there's 2-3 projects every year at least going on. And that's not counting, you know, things that I think of as extra, like Minerva Monster Day mm-hmm. and other appearances. And we really didn't even in the book get into like podcast interviews or things like that you've done, which would probably number like between 50 and 75 at least.
Well, I told you recently, just the movie interviews were over 120. Okay. And that was prior, that might have been prior to On the Trail of UFOs, which we added another 24 interviews.
Yeah.
And On the Trail of UFOs alone. Just between On the Trail of UFOs and On the Trail of Bigfoot, we've interviewed probably 50 people. And that doesn't include like the podcast, mm-hmm. obviously. But Sasquatch, we did a lot of interviews.
We did. Too. We did. And I think, I mean, you said it's comprehensive, and to a degree it is, mm-hmm. but the feeling that I have is that it's not as comprehensive as it could be. Been, I mean, it could be double the amount of information. I don't know there how interested people really would be.
That's the thing. There's an 80,000-word interview I did with Steve Bissett that still hasn't seen the light of day regarding mm-hmm. everything, and that was leading up to just Bray Road. That was the mm-hmm. last interview we had done was Bray Road. So there's a lot you could say about it, I guess. I don't know. Again, like, I don't know how interesting people find that stuff. Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was just as somebody who watches almost all of the bonus features on DVDs and stuff like that. That's kind of what I was trying to hit from a writing standpoint.
Yeah.
Is what do I think people would really find interesting, and try not to go through the same structure of every chapter. So it was a blast. I love doing it.
We're gonna make these. So the thing about this campaign is you're really only going to be able to get this stuff in the campaign. We're not going to be selling any of this separately. The book, we are tooling around with the idea of making the book available, but it would be in very small quantities. So we're not even sure that's going to happen yet. It's extreme. The one thing we didn't know is how expensive it is to print a full color book, especially coffee table size. So, if you want any of this stuff, you're going to have to back the campaign this year because it's not going to be coming back around. More than likely, we will hopefully down the road use your writing and stuff in another, maybe a 10-year retrospective or something. Yeah. But this is going to be sort of the one time you can get all this stuff. So anyway, the campaign launches February 6th. Mark and I will be doing a live Q&A like we do every year, launch party. There will be other members of the crew, and Adrian's always there with us. Which reminds me, I have to set up a babysitter for that. But we will be doing a whole live launch party Q&A for the Kickstarter on February 6th. That starts at 7 p.m. on Facebook. And we usually go like 2-3 hours. So it's not a quick run and done thing. But we're going to do that again this year. It's always a blast. And we give away a ton of stuff.
Yeah, the giveaway part is a lot of fun.
Yeah, we usually give away 20-25 items. Which
we should do like a trivia contest.
Yeah.
I could come up with some questions or something.
You should do that. Yeah. And we want our Monsteropolis listeners there too. So even if you don't, even if you're not planning on backing the Kickstarter, you want to come for this because it's basically like a 3-hour long podcast live show. We show clips from the movies and probably some behind the scenes clips and stuff like that.
So do some barbershop.
I'll be singing. Yeah.
Some of the acoustic set alone is worth tuning in for.
One thing about Mysteries and Monsters we forgot to mention is the vendors. There are going to be vendors there. 4 to 5 vendors. It's going to be Creep Geeks. It's going to be there. Wild and Weird West Virginia. Moth Boys. I'm forgetting someone. There's one more. We are. Yeah. I mean, we're going to be vendors. I forget. Right. There's someone else that's coming. I'm sorry if you're listening, if I left you off the list. So, and the Canton Palace Theater is a great place to see movies. So, all right. Let's talk. We put out a call for listeners to send in questions for us because we didn't really want to do any research for these two episodes that we're back for. So we're going to talk about listener questions, but I do think they're relating to, I think these two episodes are probably going to be very Bigfoot centric. I don't know if this is just me mentally responding to dealing too much with UFOs over the last like 2 months, but
might be just returning to the safe place of
the
Bigfoot.
Safe space of Bigfoot.
And that brings up a social media update, which is Monsteropolis is now on Instagram.
Yeah.
Thanks to the, what should I say?
Social media butterfly.
Yeah, it was essentially Andy Matsky took the bull by the horns and volunteered his services as admin of our Instagram account. So if you're interacting with Monsteropolis on Instagram, you are most likely dealing with Andy behind the scenes. And
so he's not going to tolerate any tomfoolery.
You know him.
Yeah.
So, you know, thanks to Andy for doing that. It's fun to be there. He knows all the ins and outs of the gram, such as the Q&A stuff, which he threw up on there. He didn't throw up.
He threw it
literally.
His story was just him
throwing up really and boomeranging great. It. So it comes in and out of his mouth. But but he put some Q&As up there, and actually
I can't get the mental image out of my head. This is awful.
It's a little too close to home. I'm sorry. But yeah, Instagram was actually our most successful outlet for getting questions for this episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool.
We got like 6 or 7 questions.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, we better get into this.
Yeah.
All right. So do we want to read Shang's interview or not Shang? Do we want to read our question on this one or the next one then? If we have 6 questions.
I think I almost want to save that.
Okay.
Let's
save that for the next episode.
Because it does connect.
So the next episode is going to be about Jarrett's question.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any other emails? I thought we had gotten another email.
I don't know.
Let's go into the first question. Okay. I'll check our email.
All right. So these are, you know, all over the map. So first of all, we'll take some Twitter questions. This is from the Spooky Spouses Show. Dear Monsteropolis, what are the top 3 most effective foods for luring a Momo to your house? Thanks, Spooky Spouses.
For luring a Momo to your house?
Yes.
Dogs.
Ooh.
Fry up a dog. Oh.
Yeah, well, that's one.
Do you know, not to get off track immediately, ranker.com? You ever heard of that?
Yes.
It's like one of these BuzzFeed
nonsense. Yeah, and people vote.
Clickbait. Yeah. They ran they had a most popular cryptids in every state article.
Oh, wow.
And their thumbnail image was Ken Rose in the Momo suit holding the dead dog.
No kidding.
Yeah. No credit to us, obviously.
No kidding, no credit.
Yeah. But no kidding, no credit. Dead serious, no credit. But I thought that was funny. I saw it the other day.
Huh. That's cool.
So, yeah, luring him to a house.
Yeah. Just, so the dog, dogs is number one.
Cat might.
Right.
Maybe he liked cats too.
Well, with it being Missouri, I would say fish. St. Louis barbecue.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Just... Big old plate of ribs.
Do you know, we were down there filming and never had barbecue.
Oh my.
Yeah, never went. But if you go to that area, you see why. There's nothing to eat there. There's no no place to eat. There's like,
no wonder those people looked so skinny.
Our first meal was at a McDonald's. And then the next, because nothing's open late. So mm-hmm. you're like stuck. You've got like three options. So we ate at the Mexican place twice and that was really good. But other than that, it was all like, there's no, and we had to drive to Bowling Green 20 minutes away to eat at the McDonald's.
Wow.
Yeah.
And when you were in Illinois and mm-hmm. you stayed above the bar, did you yeah. eat at the bar?
We did. Yeah. The one, and actually the reason is the guys down there seemed to think we were on some TV show. They were very excited. That. Yeah. They got pictures.
They had
signed. Yeah. They had signed stuff. They never posted, realized we're nobody. But yeah. They had us down, to eat, and we had, the food was good. It was like good pub food.
Yeah.
It was like, pizzas, and I think Jeff Byers was with us. Jeff Byers ate dinner with us. Cool. So I had like, you know, mozzarella sticks, stuff I like. And, yeah, we did eat there, and we ate at a restaurant. I don't know if we talked about it on the show or not, but we ate at a, I'm very nostalgic for the Terror Shoot, by mm-hmm. the way. I think I was going through pictures yesterday, in my Amazon cloud, and maybe that's why, but, mm-hmm. We ate at a restaurant in downtown, Jerseyville, Illinois. That was the worst breakfast I've ever had.
Oh no.
It's like the place Jason's got great stories about, about it. The, Jello pancakes. I don't know if you've heard about that.
I have never heard of this.
Man, I hate to tell the story on the show without him, because my memory of it is like, we went into this place, looked like a dive. It was in a, you know, right on a main street, kind of mm-hmm. like the place we ate when we were in Elkhorn.
Okay.
The breakfast place. Go into this place, we order our breakfast. It took her probably 20 minutes to come to our table to take a drink order. Another 20 minutes to take our meal order. And then probably a half hour before they came back. And one of the things Jason ordered, pancakes, strawberry pancakes.
Okay.
Lady shows back up 20 minutes later and says, "We're out of strawberries." And Jason's like, "I don't care." Like, we're all starving. We're ready to go film. Jason's like, "I don't care. Just give me pancakes."
Right.
Another 15 minutes passes. No exaggeration, by the way. We were in here over 2 hours. No, another 15, 20 minutes passes. She comes back and says, "We found strawberries, so he's whipping those up for you." And Jason's like, "I don't care. Like, just food." Another 20 minutes passes. She comes out, slaps this plate down in front of Jason. First of all of our food is ice cold, like ice cold. Oh, it had clearly been sitting there while they were doing this.
Wow. While they were whipping up the berries, huh?
Well, there's no berries involved. What they had done is they took strawberry Jell-O, and they either took strawberry Jell-O that was already made and heated it, or they took the strawberry Jell-O mix and just made strawberry Jell-O without putting it in the fridge. And they had dumped that on there.
Oh, no.
And it was that. It was strawberry Jell-O. He took a bite. It was hot strawberry Jell-O slathered on this terrible pancake, ice cold pancake. And that was like his breakfast. And I couldn't wrap my brain around what was going on in this place, because they were packed.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, and I love dives. Like, we every time we're out on the road, we end up in some diner. It's mm-hmm. like, those are my favorite places. This was the worst experience I've ever had at a breakfast.
That's crazy.
Place. But I have been extremely nostalgic. You know why? I think I'm going back to Alton in June for the American Hauntings Conference. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's why. I can't wait for that, actually. I'm taking Adrian and Tommy. We're going to go to...
That's cool.
Yeah, I'm going to take them to see the Piasaw and mm-hmm. all that stuff. All right. Did we answer that question?
Oh,
dogs.
Yeah.
Feed them dogs.
Dogs, barbecue.
Yeah.
And what else in Missouri would be? Oh, I was there.
Catfish. You're right on the river there. Yeah.
Yeah. Catfish. He's probably eating that anyway.
Yeah.
So just make it easy for him.
Yeah. 6 foot long.
Big bottom feeder.
A man in its belly.
Yep. Okay. So there you go. And thank you, Spooky Spouses. Next up was Cheap Geek, who asked, "What's in your pockets? What's the weird thing? Mine's a dongle for my phone for microphones. I can never find it, so I always carry it."
It's a good idea. Man, I don't know. I was carrying my Social Security around for months. Maybe longer. And I was like,
your actual card?
Yeah. Not a good idea either. So yeah, I
is it laminated or is it just the paper?
Just the paper.
Yeah,
card.
Mine too.
Yeah, I gotta get.
It's probably.
I gave it to Adrian a week ago. I was like, I gotta get this out of here. So that was one of them. But I have a lot of. I have to empty my wallet out every year because I keep too many cards. I'm like George Costanza. I keep too many like cards in my wallet. One of the cards that I have that people get a kick out of is, I am a bona fide grandfathered in member of the Landry Select Club, which was owned or which bought out Rainforest Cafe. So
okay.
When Rainforest Cafe opened at Disneyland in California, I was there for the opening.
Wow.
For the grand opening. And I went in and I bought the $10 membership, 10 mm-hmm. bucks. And it was a lifetime membership, and you bought this membership for 10 bucks, and on you get priority seating. You get so no lines. Mm-hmm. You get priority seating. You get like 20% to 30% off your meal, something like
wow.
that. Free appetizers,
so any
like
tons, location,
tons of
right?
stuff. Yeah, tons of yeah. But back then it was just Rainforest Cafe.
Okay.
So then they got bought out, and for some reason when they got bought out, Landry's is just like, you know what? If you bought that, you're still good. So they send me a whole new card. So any Landry's restaurant I go in, I get priority seating, which is crazy because like listeners are so bored right now. But it is crazy because Rainforest Cafe or T-Rex Cafe at Disney World in Florida fall under, they're both owned by mm-hmm. Landry's. Those places have lines historically that are like 2-3 hours on a busy night, like mm-hmm. sometimes longer. And when we went to Disney World, it was busy, like when we went back in September, and we walked right into both restaurants. You just walked right past the line,
your card,
give them the card, and they take us to a table.
Wow.
So that's probably the weirdest and best thing in my wallet.
That is...
slash pocket.
Yeah. That was a good investment.
Yeah.
$10.
$10. And that was that would have been 2003 that I did that.
Weirdest thing in my pocket, this made me laugh when I read it, because I don't have it in my pocket at the moment, but attached to my key ring is a tick key. And I bought a tick key
the other day
because of Small Town Monsters and our That's experiences in the wild.
I saw those at the CVNP visitor center. Mm-hmm.
After Jason's experience coming yeah. home from the Which Momo one? Shoot.
Jason's had multiple.
Yeah. Well, I had one on my sock after the Momo shoot.
Mm-hmm.
So I still have the tick key on my my key ring, which is people probably think it's a bottle opener or something. But
yeah, they're weird. They work?
Have they you had do to work. Try? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I Jason is like a tick attractant or something because mm-hmm. he had multiple when we were filming with the Japanese TV show back in 2017 down in Point Pleasant mm-hmm. too. I mean, we all did. We would go home or go back to the hotel at night and have to stand in the shower and take all our clothes off, and they would fall off of you. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a weird one.
Yep.
All right.
So me and my tick key.
And me and my Landry Select.
Yeah, well, there you have it. Okay, so moving on to the Instagram questions.
We also have one on Twitter. I sent you.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. I sent
you
a screen grab of that.
That's right. I'll pull that up. Then we can move on. Here it is. Yeah, this is a good one. What do I do with it? Well, we'll return to that.
Mm-hmm. I have it somewhere.
Oh, okay.
Too. I can cut all this out.
Good. Good. Okay. So.
Oh, it's right here. Favorite paranormal subject matter for each of you guys. The one subject you can't research enough. Is that the one you were thinking of?
Yep.
Okay. By at Garden Wicked. The Wicked Garden podcast. Favorite paranormal subject matter for each of you. I think we've talked about this. I mean, I don't know what, sometimes people are weird about like what falls into the realm of the paranormal. Mm-hmm. Like some people don't consider cryptozoology yeah. or like cryptids. And I put it all under the paranormal banner personally. Mm-hmm. My favorite topic still remains Bigfoot. I will say I have rediscovered a love for the ufology, and it isn't due to the community, which you're going to get a pretty good idea of what I think of the community in the first episode of On the Trail of UFOs. Mm-hmm. But just the subject in general, so widespread and so interesting, covers so many different subtopics, you know, and I do think that I I love that subject, but I definitely get burned out on it quicker than I do something like Bigfoot. And one of the reasons I get burned out on it is just like my interaction and looking at what the community is like. It's so negative. It's like how I feel about the ghost hunting community. It seems so rooted in celebrity and being on TV. That isn't necessarily just the only problem with ufology. Whereas I think with ghost hunting, that's kind of like, you can nail that down. Ufology, there's a weird, everyone's at war with each other and they're all mean.
They're all mean. And with UFOs, I think what's so interesting too is how it's tied into American history. Mm-hmm. There's so many sidebars that are just historical fact. Yeah. Whatever else is happening in the sky. I mean,
and world history.
World history,
like that
too.
Iran story.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's so interesting. Yeah. And that's another, I really want to show you that episode. I found all this archival footage of Tehran the year that happened.
No kidding.
So that's all in there. Yeah. Like
specific to
set the stage for what it would have been like being in Tehran at that time. So, but yeah, it's Bigfoot. And then I really do like ufology. Really find ufology. I love this spook light stuff though. The earth lights kind of thing. I think that's creeping up my list of like favorite topics of the genre, I guess, paranormal genre.
I have to, I'll lend you that earth lights.
Yeah.
Because you'd like that a lot.
We got to do it on the trail of earth lights.
Ooh. Yeah. In the late 90s, just to dovetail off of that, there was Area 51 specifically.
Mm-hmm.
I was just, any book that people were putting out, I was trying to get my hands on. Like, there's one, Dreamland.
Mm-hmm.
Forget the author, but I read that. I have a copy now. It's super good. I forget the name.
Streber wasn't there something to do with Streber that was called Dreamland?
That was a radio show that he did.
All right.
And separately he had that, and when he would host Coast to Coast AM, kind of call it.
Do you have a favorite? Well. What's your favorite?
Well, yeah, I mean,
Area 51.
Area 50, for a time it was Area 51.
Yeah.
But it's Bigfoot for me too. Yeah. I mean, that's the automatic always.
It was my favorite before I had something happen. Now that I've had something happen, I find that it's the one that I can't really get enough of.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can burn out on listening to other people talk about it, but it's the one where like my own thinking will take me there.
Mm-hmm.
And I like pondering.
Yeah. You know, as far as research goes, it's hands down, it's Bigfoot.
Yeah.
And partially because so much research has been done and is just sitting there on shelves. Like I was looking through my own collection over Christmas break, and like Peter Burns' book has the entire transcript of Ivan Sanderson's Minnesota Iceman study.
Yeah.
He just threw that in as an appendix. And so there's just so much that's been done. And, you know, I picked up Shannon's book over break, and there was another Kindle book I had never seen before that had just come out in late 2019.
My cousin Jenny bought Shannon's book.
Oh.
Well, my cousin Jenny isn't into this stuff.
Yeah.
But she was like interested.
Yeah.
Because she knows Shannon. So.
Mm-hmm. So that, yeah, it's Bigfoot for sure.
Really quickly, while I'm thinking of this and you're looking for another question, buy your tickets for Mysteries and Monsters if you're planning on coming. We're doing an interview later today with Cleveland Magazine, and we've got a press deluge that's going to start in the next couple of weeks. It's going to get a lot of press locally. It will, I don't think it's going to sell out, but getting your tickets early will mean you can navigate around the box office, which is the big thing. You don't want to have to stand at that box office. If you order in advance, you'll get your tickets in the mail, and then you don't have to stand in line at will call. And we say this every single time we do an event at the Palace Theater, they line up around the building because it's not a very big area.
Mm-hmm.
Downtown Canton isn't the greatest, and it's March, so it might be raining. So anyway, buy your tickets in advance so you can skip the line.
It might open the balcony up for...
The balcony is going to be open.
Will it?
Because vendor area is up there.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
All right. Next question. What are your middle names and favorite colors?
Whoa. Who asked that?
That is Cryptid Campfire.
Okay. Cryptid Campfire. My middle name is Tyler. And for a long time, I was embarrassed by my last name. And I went by Seth Tyler.
Oh.
Yeah. And in fact, like when I was doing my old blog and stuff, it was all Seth mm-hmm. Tyler.
You're related to Steven Tyler?
Steven Tyler's son. Yeah. Liv Tyler's my sister. Yeah. No, but yeah, it's Seth Tyler. Favorite color is blue.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's Tommy's favorite color.
Is
right
it
now.
Really?
Yeah, he loves it. It's his favorite. His big thing right now is asking you what color everything is.
Oh, so really?
Like, what color is that? You know, like he wants to know. I don't know why I gave him that like Southern accent. What color is that?
All 2-year-olds have that accent, yeah. Really. They never grow out of it.
What is your middle name?
My middle name is Gerald, which is my father's first name.
Okay. Yeah.
And his middle name is my grandfather's first name. And so we did it to Andy. Middle name is my first name. Good. So we kept the tradition going.
I don't think I knew that either. Yeah. Wow, I'm learning a lot today about the Matskys.
Yeah. And this has been pointed out to me before by those type of people. Mm-hmm. Black is my favorite color. And mm-hmm. I've been told, well, that's not a color. It's the absence of color. And I'm like,
that sounds like something whatever. Andy would say. Did Andy say that to you? Was that Andy that did it?
I don't want to throw him under the bus because he listens to this show.
Okay.
Now.
I have a Andy, that was you. I know it.
So if you had to say, okay, that's a non-color,
yeah.
Then I would say probably blue or green, maybe green.
Okay.
Like a forest green.
Ooh, nice. All right.
Yes. Continuing on, we have, these keep disappearing on me. I don't understand. All right, here we go. CJM asks, original or prequel?
Trilogy?
I suppose.
It's not even a... Why is that a question? Here's the thing, though. At one time, I was a rabid Star Wars fanatic. Like, you know, I think I've shown you, like, my collection of extended universe books. And when I graduated in 1999, I spent all of my graduation money on Phantom Menace toys. I mean, mm-hmm. like, I was a rabid Star Wars fanatic. And... I still appreciate all of it. I don't really like, we haven't talked about Rise of Skywalker yet, but like I've already seen it twice. I adored Last Jedi mm-hmm. mostly because it kicked everyone's expectations in the teeth. And I liked the bravery of I hate to use words like that one,
yeah.
But I liked the bravery of the filmmaking on that one, mm-hmm. like the storytelling.
I just like the explosions in that movie.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
They're amazing.
Some good ones. But it also has, in my opinion, that the lightsaber duel in the throne room is the best of the new trilogy. That's the best. Because one thing I can say about the new ones is the lightsaber duels were all kind of like ho-hum. Like there just wasn't anything that really made me go, you know, like there was no Duel of the Fates, Darth Maul mm-hmm. moment in the new ones. But that scene is really well choreographed and it's beautifully shot, like the, mm-hmm. the slow motion and everything. I loved that scene. So I do not, unlike a lot of people, I don't hate the prequels, and I appreciate them for what they are. Mm-hmm. And I like I saw Phantom Menace 11 times in the theater.
Wow.
And if I make my 1999 movie, the movie's gonna revolve around me seeing Phantom Menace mm-hmm. in the theater 11 yeah. times. So like I appreciate all of them. I can't say the one that everyone seems to be okay with is the one I like the least, the Revenge of the Sith.
Oh.
It's whatever. Mm-hmm. Like you knew you were getting to that point. It's kind of like how I felt about Return of the King. Not to brag on Return. I like mm-hmm. Return of the King, but my favorite of the trilogy is Two Towers.
Mm-hmm.
And because you knew what you were getting with Revenge of the mm-hmm. Sith. So you always knew like that's where we're going to end. Whereas Two Towers, man, it could go anywhere.
Anything could happen.
Could happen. Those ends, they might kill everybody.
Frodo could just lose the ring and fall off the chain.
Yeah. So I have an appreciation for prequel trilogy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't hate the prequels either. I mean, I prefer the original just because I was around for the original string. You know, as a 4 or 5 year old, I was seeing episode 4,
yeah.
which no one knew was episode 4 at the time, but that's for me, I guess that's more nostalgia than anything at this point, is I went through that whole cycle of being completely shocked by the I am your father revelation and all that stuff.
See, I think I'm to a point where I no longer feel defensive of any one theory, like opinion anymore. And, you know, I still get weirded out by the fact that like the Marvel movies are so well received. But it was bizarre to me when Rise of Skywalker came out, because it seemed like everyone just ragged on it, and I could not wrap my brain around that. I still can't really wrap my brain around it. And the people that are like, well, the plotting's all over the map, and like the writing is ho-hum, and I'm like, have you seen a Star Wars? Like, this is Star Wars.
Yeah.
This is what they do. They're supposed to mimic serials, 1940s, 30s and 40s like film Flash serials. Gordon. Flash Gordon. Like, you're... People just don't... I feel like at some point, people just stopped getting it. Like, they don't get what this is. Mm-hmm. So, it's fine. I really liked Rise of Skywalker. I really did. And I saw it twice, and the second time I actually enjoyed it more than the first time, and it actually alleviated a lot of the problems I had with it. I do have plotting issues with it. I think this is one of the few cases... This is how I felt about Batman versus Superman. I feel like there is a J.J. Abrams cut of this that's like 3 hours, 10 minutes long that would solve every issue I have with it.
Yeah.
And to me, it just felt too rushed. And a lot of people have said that, especially those first like 30 minutes are ridiculous. I don't know what they were thinking and thinking that was like, let's go ahead and just put this out. Like you can't, scenes have to breathe. Like,
right.
And there's stuff happening in the beginning of that movie that I could not track with. I wish they had more of a plan going into the whole thing in place.
Sure.
And then they tried to follow that. Having said that, my favorite of the trilogy is the sequel, or is the second one, where they threw out the plan and just changed everything. So don't listen to me.
I couldn't believe people who said they thought that Rise was a long movie. It didn't feel like a long movie to me at all.
Didn't feel long enough. I just really felt like... The pacing, the biggest issue I had, and this is not something I ever say, but the pacing just, it needed to be longer, just needed more story.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing I said to Andy was, in a sense, and this is very Star Wars-esque, is this sets up like five or six other stories that I would love to know.
Yeah.
Like Lando's thing. And people will say, well, that's in a book and stuff. But I mean, cinematically, those would be pretty cool stories as well. And like the guy who came to that desert planet hunting Luke.
Yeah.
That I just love the fact that there's these stories that
mythology
are assumed to be out there, and you're sort of discovering the...
That is very Star Wars.
Yeah.
That goes all the way back to A New Hope.
Mm-hmm. All right.
How did we start talking about
original
that?
Or prequel?
Okay.
Was the question.
All right.
Let's see. This is probably my favorite. Dog Papa 66.
Nice.
Dog Man.
That's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's implied as a question, because we asked for questions, and so Dog Man.
Do you know, I've always thought this subject is ludicrous, and I made a movie about it.
Yeah.
But I've always thought it was ludicrous, but I've recently spoken to two very rational people who had sightings of Dog Man. And, you know, like, and I think we've actually talked about it on the show a few times, like it sort of throw out the, it was a Bigfoot, like a misbegotten Bigfoot lost or something. There is no rational explanation for what people are seeing. If they see that, I just don't get it. We talked, I have a guy sent me a report, this past week, and I can't talk about it in any great detail, but in 1963 in Gallipolis, Ohio, he saw two men in suits with guns and like dog faces and with red eyes, and you might, and if you,
interesting placement of
that. I'll have to show you who this guy is.
Okay.
Just totally normal. Said it's bothered him his whole life. Wanted to talk to someone. I gave him the less, cause I told him I'm a documentarian, I can't help you. I give him the less, but really interesting story. And just from our interaction on Facebook, obviously I haven't met the guy, seemed totally rational, normal person, you know, older guy, said it's bothering him his whole life.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, Dog Man. I don't know what people are saying. I don't know what it is.
I'm pro Dog Man. I want him to be safe.
Get out there. Do your thing.
All right, this is more of a statement than a question, but it does beg a response. Moth Boys podcast says, you should do an episode with Moth Boys. Someone told me they were funny or whatever.
Yeah, well, if Moth Boys drive to Wadsworth, Ohio, we could totally do a Moth Boys episode in studio. Monstropolis Moth Boys. And then we could go across the street and get lunch at the cafe. So there's your invitation, guys.
Yes.
Let us know a date. We'll work it out.
It'd be like the Legion of Doom.
Mm-hmm. Come forming. Up to STM HQ.
Cool. Let's see. All right. We have another question. What legend / anomaly / et cetera outside North America would you like to make a documentary about? That's from Ethan.
Ethan? Not my brother.
No.
Oh, okay. There's like that giant vampire bat thing that's like supposed to be as big as a person. It's in like Peru or something.
Mm, mm-hmm.
I've always been really interested in that because of the Destination Truth episodes I saw about it, or episode I saw about it. It's either that or like Mekele.
Oh.
Mbembe. Mekele Mbembe or...
In the Congo.
Or that giant vampire bat. Although I'm terrified of bats, so I'd probably go with Mekele Mbembe.
Face your fears.
Yeah.
Do the giant. Yeah, that's true. Let's do the giant.
We'll do the giant bat.
You know what would be fun to tie this into our Japan trip?
Oh yeah.
That's now impending. Is the Japanese yokai, the legends of the yokai and ghosts.
Oh, dude, if there's a way to turn that into a business trip, we can make this happen pretty quick.
Because there's Shigeru Mizuki is a graphic novelist who invented Kitaro, mm-hmm. who is like this little boy who was born of a yokai ghost, and he goes around and fights other yokais that are bothering people. And his hometown has all these statues set up going down the main street of the different yokai that are in the comic. It's amazing.
Does Japan have their own Bigfoot?
Yeah, they have in the where called the Japanese Alps. There is, I forget, they even have a term for it, and it's escaping me.
We
got to
find out. There's a research group
ridiculous.
Out there that goes looking. Because there's an episode of On the Trail of Bigfoot. Yeah, we're going to Asia.
Yeah.
How are we on questions?
Let's see. Almost done.
Okay.
We've got
we're almost
one
out of
Andy
time.
Matsky.
Oh dear.
Yes.
Is this about the color black not being your color?
No,
no. Okay.
Will the new movie be a real movie or a documentary?
You little.
I think by real movie, he means.
Yeah. No, this is.
Momo.
He knows this drives me crazy.
Okay.
This is a question we get continually. Is like, are you making a real movie or a documentary? And it has been my biggest pet peeve in making documentaries is that they're a genre of movie. It's all movie. Like a if we're talking about Mothman, it is not at all like Momo. In fact, nothing we're doing this year is going to be like Momo. Nothing we're probably ever going to do again is like Momo. Mm-hmm. I don't know that Momo begs for a sequel or anything like that. And even in terms of storytelling, I don't think we're going to go back to that well ever. This one feels very much, my goal with this one is to make it feel like right in between Terror in the Skies and The Mothman of Point Pleasant. That's what I want it to be, and a little bit of Bray Road. It is going to be straight ahead horror, but it'll have a little bit of melancholy, have a lot of history, and a ton of eyewitness reports. And Bellwitch, I've only really done preliminary pre-production stuff, but I have had phone calls with people in Adams already. And we are lining up some really cool things, including potentially filming all our recreations and the recreation of the actual Bell House that's in Adams. So, we're working on some stuff with both of these that I think people are going to be, I mean, the goal, these are documentaries, and the goal is always going to be to make the next one better than the last. So maybe from a technical standpoint, Momo wasn't better than Terror in the Skies. I think Terror in the Skies from a technical standpoint is the best documentary we've ever made. But Momo did things, new things that we, I would say from a storytelling standpoint, we did things that we'd never done before, that no one's ever done before. That in itself was an achievement. So we always want to be pushing beyond where we were, you know, with the previous film. We don't rest on our laurels at STM, because we get bored. I think we've talked about it before. Like, if we were just doing the same stuff over and over, we'd all get bored. Mm-hmm. So Terror in the Skies was a great technical achievement, I think, for what we were working with. The we're going to build off of that with the Mothman Legacy. And I think the biggest thing you're going to notice is a complete lack of animation. There's not that there isn't going to be CG in it, but, the hand-drawn style and the hand-drawn animated look is going away. Terror in the Skies was sort of the last time you're going to see that sort of thing for the foreseeable future in an STM film. Mothman Legacy is going to be very rooted in real world recreations that we're shooting. And, the witness interviews are fantastic.
Yeah. I was going to say the strength of those interviews really will carry a lot of what happened.
Yeah. And again, it's not that there's the animation, was a huge part of everything from Mothman up until Terror in the Skies. But, you know, it's also just one storytelling tool that we're capable of utilizing. And I think there's other things that if you talk to people about what their favorite moments in Terror in the Sky were, the thing I most consistently hear is the opening with a kid. And that think of that is what we're doing going forward. Like, that sort of recreation is what is going to be stepping up. And Santino, who's doing all this, has other tools beyond just CG, and there will be animation. It's just not going to be as in Mothman Legacy. There's going to be some animation actually, but it's not going to be what you're used to seeing, and it's there to heighten the folkloric history of the story rather than show you the Mothman. So Andy, it's a real movie, all right? And it's a documentary. I think that does it. We did almost an hour long show based off this. So we're going to be back next week. Get your tickets, Mysteries and Monsters. Get geared up for the Kickstarter launching February 6th. Join us for the Kickstarter live show February 6th at 6-7 p.m. I think that does it.
Yeah. Oh, letters.
Letters. MonsteropolisMail@gmail.com. Send them in and we'll read them on the show. The next show is going to be at least in part based off of a letter we got from Jarrett. So we're going to talk about that next week. So see you later.
Monsteropolis is proudly presented on Wadsworth Community Radio 97.1 FM or streaming live at wadsworthcommunityradio.com and is proudly underwritten by Thurber's Jewelers on the Square in downtown Wadsworth.